Okay, so off we go. Welcome, hearty welcome to everybody who's come and attended at this early hour of the morning. And apologies, I believe there was a slight mix-up with the the timing that some of you may have noticed, that it should have been GMT, which is what it is now. So it's our normal time from now on. And I've got a bit of a funny throat, so again, apologies if I go croaky. First of all, I've been asked to do a welcome on behalf of Land of Joy. I'm not there at the moment, and it's a shame actually we can't be there because it is a very beautiful, welcoming, lovely space. And it's on a lovely day like today, it would be great to be there. However, this is better than nothing, so let's make the most of it. And again, just to let you know that's fine. I think that's all I need to say about Land of Joy. Maybe I'll say a bit more at the end. So Tracy, welcome. Would you mind just muting yourself for now?
Thank you.
Okay, so some of you I know, good to see some friends, and some I've not met before. So let's just start with a bit of introduction. Hi there. Hi. I was asked to do this course, which I was very actually thrilled to be asked to do it. And a great subject, and I've really enjoyed researching it. Normally, I have led a couple of courses at Land of Joy before on mindfulness in nature, been the ones that I've led before. So this is a slightly new direction and a very interesting one for me. I am a Buddhist myself. Land of Joy is a Buddhist center. I am a Buddhist myself and have been for some time. But this course is aimed at people of any faith or of none. What I know, what I understand of compassion, and what I'll be trying to put across comes from my understanding of Buddhist teachings. But I'm really I've tried to present it in a way that doesn't assume any Buddhist understanding or I'm not trying to sign up any new recruits either. So just take from it what you find helpful. And hopefully in the course of discussions we can come to some shared understanding and also recognize any differences that there may be in our understanding. This will be recorded. It is being recorded, but I'm going to ask people to introduce themselves in a moment, but anything personal obviously will not be put on the recording because it will be shared on the YouTube, on the Land of Joy website. So I think that's fine. There'll be kind of discussions, question and answers, and we just remind people obviously to be compassionate when we're talking and discussing, and also to recognize sort of privacy, people's any privacy issues as well, should that arise. Okay, so that's me. As I say, I'm Lynn. I've been a Buddhist for about nearly 40 years now, I guess. So it tends to be the way I see the world, but mostly I find it just a very helpful way of looking at the world and trying to navigate my way through life, really. What I'm going to ask you to do is one by one, if you don't mind, just say your name and maybe one thing that you would hope to gain from attending the course this weekend. Then I'll talk a little bit more about the course. And perhaps if you sort of say your name and then and say your sort of one thing, what you're hoping to get from the course, if you can think of it, and then say the name of somebody else, and the next person will know to mute so we can kind of go smoothly on. And I think that's everybody, isn't it, now, who's everybody's spoken. Okay, so I'll just give a brief outline of how I see the weekend going. I'm hoping to be able to answer the points that were raised of people's expectations. At least in my planning, I've covered them. So I hope all goes according to plan. Never a guarantee, but I'm certainly planning to look at just investigate, unpick a little bit compassion in general, and I'll be doing more of that today. What it is, what it isn't, what gets in the way of developing compassion, and what helps us to develop our compassion in general. And then tomorrow, in particular, focus down more on compassion for ourselves, because I think a couple of people have mentioned, and it's certainly my experience, it's so much easier to have compassion for other people than it is ourselves, generally speaking. We can be our own worst enemy, our own harshest critic a lot of the time. And, you know, we wouldn't treat a dog the way we treat ourselves sometimes in terms of the critical voice. So it is important. And while we can be compassionate towards others without kind of focusing on ourselves, it's very difficult to sustain it, and we get to, I think, what Leslie was talking about, that stage of burnout, when we really just can't keep it up anymore, because we need nourishment ourselves to do that. So that will be tomorrow, looking in more depth at that, and also looking at just in the last session, a sort of a glimpse at the impact compassion can have on the world. You know, if we have compassion for ourselves and compassion to others, and to the extent that we can develop our compassion, the extent that we can influence those around us, and who knows how far those ripples of influence will spread. Because it was originally planned as a retreat, and because we all kind of work hard during the week, and, you know, whatever, we're retired or not, this we're still busy during the week, I thought I would make it as quite heavily focused on meditation and reflection together. I'll give some presentation, but I certainly won't be talking for the entire morning. I'll give sort of, you know, a little bit each in each session. But within each session, I plan that we'll have two meditation sessions that, and these actually will be the tools that help us to develop compassion. So the first session, which we'll start in just a moment, will be our first act of compassion, kindness to ourselves, where we will be settling within our body and within our minds, and just coming home, finding a place to come home to. I'm guessing from the sound of things that people are already quite familiar with that practice, but I'll, you know, introduce a few ideas along the way anyway. And then towards the end of the session, we'll do a reflection on what we've actually been talking about. And there will be time for discussion as well. Hopefully, or question and answer discussion between ourselves at the end of each session, before we go off for our cup of tea, our tea breaks. So hopefully what I'm hoping to get from the day is that I will, well, it seems like you're already inspired or enthused to develop compassion. You already recognize the value of it. So job done there, no problem. But also to give us the tools to develop in various aspects and at various levels. So I hope that's okay. So let's start with a 10 minutes, say, session of meditation. So is there anybody who hasn't meditated before at all? If you just raise your hand. No? Okay, I've got that feeling. So we'll do just, I mean, if you have your own practice already that works for you, which is one of settling the mind and settling the body, then by all means, just slip into that practice. If not, I'll just give a few guidelines, and then we'll do that practice together. So initially, we focus on a posture which is supportive of meditation. If you want to turn off your cameras, you're very welcome to do so for this time. If you want to leave them on, that's also fine. So let's first become aware of our bodies. And say we adopt a posture that is supportive of meditation. The qualities, the mental qualities we want to develop are stability, a stillness, to give our minds, our busy minds, a rest, and also alertness. Unless we're really exhausted, we don't want to drift into sleep. We want to develop this habit of meditation, which brings us to a place of ease and rest that isn't sleep. And the third quality of body and mind which supports those is to be relaxed. So to be relaxed in our body, and to relax, to let go of any expectations of what a meditation session should or shouldn't be. And just gently bring your awareness through your body, being aware of any physical sensations, starting at the top of your head, going down to the soles of your feet, feeling grounded, supported by the chair, the floor, the cushion, whichever. But also feeling alert. If there's any area of tension or discomfort in the body now, then make any adjustments as you breathe out. And gradually narrow your focus of awareness from your body, specifically to your breathing. So wherever you're more aware of the breath, whether it be at the nostrils, as the air comes in and out, the chest, or the rising and falling of the abdomen, whichever, then maintain your focus there. Just observe what's happening. Don't breathe in any special way, but observe what happens with each in and out breath. And as you all know, your mind will inevitably wander. It's natural, it's what minds do. They're used to being active. So don't worry, just gently bring your attention back whenever you notice it's gone. And this simple breathing meditation can actually be the most basic but most profound act of kindness to yourself that we do for ourselves. By training the mind to come home to a place of peace, which we can access at any time. That's a really good place to start. Okay, and gently relax the meditation. Okay, so let's think today about, just to start with, about a definition maybe of compassion. We all know it. People have said in their introductions they're aware of what compassion is. It's not a specifically Buddhist thing. It's part of every religion, part of every community, and actually, if we think about it, society wouldn't be able to function at all without it. So we kind of know what it means, but we can just go deeper, I think, and unpick it a little bit, and that can kind of help us if we want to cultivate our sense of compassion. So, basically, I'm coming from the place that I think compassion is a good thing. It's a great necessity in terms of our own well-being and the well-being and the health of societies we live in, that it is something not that we're born with or without, that we all have to a degree, that we all recognize it to agree. I think people have said that, shown that at the beginning, but actually it is a state of mind. Actually, yeah, that's another factor, that it is a state of mind. When we're feeling compassionate, we're not necessarily acting or anything like that. It's something that we feel, an emotion or a mental state, some kind of mental state. And that it is possible to develop it further, actively, consciously. We can develop it in terms of, at the moment, when we feel compassion, it really does vary, but it tends to be in response to a particular stimulus. So it might be when I was thinking about, you know, sort of times when I've been really moved by something, moved by compassion, images that came to mind were things like, I still can barely bear to even say it, let alone remember it, but when in the Australian bushfires, the koala bears who were burned. On, you know, Red Nose Day, whenever you see the videos of people's the suffering that is involved in people's lives, can be very moving. Very moving. Items on the news, I mean, you know, now, it's in particular, I guess, we're more focused on the news and focused on how our interactions with each other and how much we depend on each other, then we're much more aware of compassion, I think, and the need for it, compassion in life. And, you know, from our own life experience, we know what it is. So one of the books, so I've shown, sort of put a list of resources. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to look at them yet. But one of the books that I really have taken a lot from here is a book, this book here, called A Fearless Heart. It's on the booklet, it's on the resources list, so you don't need to write it down, by Thubten Jinpa, who was a Tibetan Buddhist monk, was also a translator to His Holiness the Dalai Lama for a very long time, is now raising a family and living a normal life in a non-monastic life in Canada. Anyway, a definition that he had is compassion is a sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another's suffering. So first we're talking about compassion in general. A sense of concern that arises when we're confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to see that suffering relieved. Within that, there's three different aspects. Two of them we would generally recognize. The third one isn't necessarily explicit generally, I think. So first of all, we recognize somebody's pain, the difficulties, that the trouble that they're having. We see it, we notice it. And that's not always the case. Again, that we can get better or be better or worse at that. And second aspect is that we care, that it bothers us. Again, our own or others' pain. So when we're talking about other people, then we often think of empathy. In terms of that, we see another's pain and it bothers us. And within science, they talk about, or they, you know, they kind of sort of wire up people's brains, and they see that they say that apparently if we observe another's pain with empathy, the areas of the brain that would be associated with their own pain also light up as well. So it's as though we're experiencing that pain ourselves. That's empathy. And it's important. I'll go back to that later to make that distinction. And then there is the wish to see that suffering removed. That's an element that doesn't always necessarily get, people don't always necessarily focus on that aspect of it. If you go back to the Latin root of compassion, it means to suffer with. And so people think it's that empathy side of things. It's that you see another person's pain and you are moved, you care, it upsets you. But the third element is, is often there, but it's not always recognized, is that wish to remove. Can I help? And maybe I can and maybe I can't, but the compassion takes it further. Anybody have any problems with that? Raise your hand if you have any difficulties or anything you'd like to question already. No? Oh, yeah. So it can be helpful to know what it isn't as well, to be clear in the compassion. So obviously often when they talk about these types of qualities, they talk about far enemies, which is the exact opposite. So clearly it's not cruelty or indifference. You know, we can see they are kind of the opposite, and where cruelty or indifference are in the mind, compassion can't arise because they're completely opposite of each other. They also talk about near enemies, which are kind of states of mind which are kind of have some similarities and can sometimes be confused with these positive qualities we want to develop, but actually are different. And it's important to kind of get that difference. So what it isn't is pity. Feeling pity for somebody is different from feeling compassionate towards somebody. Feeling pity somehow, and I was thinking about how to distinguish the two, what came to my mind was that somehow if I pity you, it somehow suggests that I've got it all together, that I don't have this problem. And if only you were as clever or as wise as me, then, you know, I wish that for you so that you don't have that problem too. Whereas, of course, compassion comes from the place of, you know, whereas pity is up looking down, compassion comes from a place of we're all in this together. Today it's you who's got this problem. Yesterday it was me, or tomorrow it could be me. We all share. We have this basic equality. And so if I can help you now, that's fine. And I will do so to the best of my ability, knowing full well that maybe you helped me yesterday or maybe you will help me tomorrow. No, there's no feeling of superiority involved, which there may well be, you know, however delicately and however kind of hidden in within pity. And within societies that are kind of marginal, I was friends with a young man who grew up in Chad, and it was lived on the edge of sort of the Sahara. And within his society, there was just that so much more equality of course you help somebody, because you know very much if you're living, you know, if your livelihood or if your everything could kind of disappear overnight, which actually we all know now, then of course there's going to be much more mutual support and help. So it's not pity and it's not sentimentality either. It's just, oh bless, oh dear, oh what a shame, and then moving on. There's that real heartfelt connection there with it. Also something that tends to get maybe not a bit confused or a bit muddled up, a little tied up with compassion is righteous anger. That comes up a lot. We see suffering. We maybe see the cause of that suffering, or what we think is the cause of that suffering, and we get angry on behalf of that person. And so we're distracted away from compassion there. And that thing that really kind of brought that alive to me, I was reading in the magazine, the Mandala magazine, in fact, where I've already reproduced one article, and I couldn't find this article, but it was an article written by a prisoner in an American prison, and he was attending a meditation group, and he kind of noticed when he was thinking about compassion, he noticed within that group, over a course of a couple of months, there were two different stories of a young child dying that they all the prisoners became aware of within their discussion group, and two totally different responses. One was where I think it was two twins, a set of twins who'd been conjoined at the head, and they'd been aware, there'd been lots of media coverage of, you know, the trying to separate the twins and would they survive and would they not? And one twin did survive and one twin didn't. And the guy who wrote the article was saying, you know, within their group, everybody just felt intense compassion for both the twins and their parents, obviously. It was just this outpouring of compassion. A few months later on, there was another story in the media where it was a young girl who was murdered. I mean, equally tragic loss to the family. But the compassion was just very fleeting, they said with them. Straight away, they got involved in anger against, you know, the perpetrator of the murder, whoever it was. And it was just a whole totally different experience. And of course, they're different situations. But his point was it made an impression on me, is that in the second one, the compassion got lost. It got overwhelmed. It was a distraction, the anger. Maybe because the compassion was the pain was too difficult to be with. I don't know, who knows, whatever triggers there are. But compassion can be difficult to sit with, to be with. And we can distract ourselves in any number of ways. And maybe sometimes anger is a response, outrage at stuff that's happened. But if we get distracted by that, then we've lost touch with we're in danger of losing touch with our compassion. Okay, so we all experience compassion to a greater or lesser degree at some time in our life. And generally it tends to be, as I said, sort of dependent on an external trigger. Somebody we care about, or this with somebody, something, or someone we have some connection with, we see their suffering, and it elicits a response in us. It tends to be limited to in terms of intensity, and there's only so much we can bear, and it tends to be limited in terms of, extent, who we feel it for. There are some people, beings, creatures we feel compassion for, and others we don't. And it also is limited by how we're feeling on the day, how much energy we've got, that kind of thing. Knowing those factors, those can help us, we can kind of work with those to help develop it, to cultivate it more strongly, while being compassionate with ourselves at the same time, not expecting perfection. But actually what the teachings say, the experience of people who've done this kind of work says, is that we can actually develop our compassion to such an extent that it is just part of who we are. It is just, compassion is just one of those qualities that is always present in the mind, so that whatever situation we're in, compassion, our response comes from compassion. And when we're just by ourselves, compassion is still there within our minds. It just is part of, a permanent part of our mind stream. So that's what's possible. Slowly we would get there, and we'll look at a bit later on how you get there and what sort of things might get in the way of it. So there's two aspects. There's what we can do to cultivate it, and some of the meditations will be around that. And then there's what is it in us people generally that tends to block our compassion, our natural compassion. And we can do some meditations around that as well. And I think just the last thing, last two things I want to say is that, I think we all know that our compassion is one of the things that distinguishes us as human beings, as what makes us human. For a while, I don't know, there was a view going around based on a misunderstanding, I think, of the evolutionary sort of process, that actually, if we are kind, if we are compassionate, it is just because we want to get something back, kind of the notion of dog eat dog in the world, or the selfish gene. We're only doing it so that we can reproduce. We're only being kind so that we can reproduce. And actually, I think science now is saying, and religions and philosophies have been saying forever, really, that compassion is a natural part of being human, to a greater or lesser degree, as I say, and that we can actively, consciously cultivate it to a greater degree. It's not an aberration, it's just who we are. And we feel better in ourselves, we feel more human, more connected, when we are acting from a place of compassion, when we're able to do so. And the other thing I suppose I want to say is that I'll come back to that later. Yeah, it does take, it can also take great courage to consciously commit to developing compassion as well. Okay, let's I'm going to move on to a meditation. I want to, as much as possible through the meditations, to get a felt sense of you know, some of the feelings behind and involved within compassion and compassion itself. So that, well, it's just a very effective way of doing a meditation, I think. So this one.
Lynn, could I just ask Tracy, did you have a question? Can you unmute, please?
Thank you. Yeah, it was really to say, fitting with what you were saying, Lynn, there are, so I had an experience of being with somebody who had lost a baby who was stillborn, and it was a friend of mine, and there was one point, I mean, I was with her through various different stages of it all, but I do remember really strongly being with her when she was back home and being utterly overwhelmed with her, really, and needing I was overwhelmed for her situation generally, I think. I just remember needing to get out to get away from her, which was so hard. Because she didn't have that luxury to run away from it. So I think what you were saying just rang true, really, that sometimes, sorry,
don't worry,
you can reach a point where it's really hard to take any, you know, to still be there, I suppose. And I was just recognising that can be incredibly, it can need incredible courage, I guess, and resources, which I guess is why we're all here, because we recognise it's difficult. But yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't realise I'd get upset. But
don't worry at all. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Being overwhelmed. That was one of the things we're going to be looking at again. But feeling overwhelmed is one of the main fears that we have when we're being compassionate, and actually not just a fear, an experience of feeling overwhelmed, which is how I think, by going through those experiences, as you've done, giving the best that we possibly can, we begin to learn wisdom. As well, the wisdom, which is another side of compassion, and those of you who know the Buddhist path know that it's the other wing, that the two aspects go together, wisdom and compassion. Wisdom in knowing what we're capable of, in knowing when, you know, we need to look after ourselves, to have compassion for ourselves a bit, and to take ourselves away, and also wisdom in knowing what's possible. We can't actually take away somebody else's suffering. That's not possible. We can help to the best of our ability, and knowing that, setting realistic expectations for ourselves, I think is one of the ways that we can develop that wisdom. But you know, it's not a magic bullet. We tend to get overwhelmed and you know, and then we learn, oh, can't do that. I tried my best. I really helped as much as I could, but it was too much. So another time I might try something different. Who knows? But yeah, thank you for sharing. Thank you. Anne.
I just thought, as you were saying that, I know we can't take away anyone else's suffering, but sometimes by our reaction, if it's a compassionate reaction, we can stop it escalating for them. So we can. And I think that's a huge thing, because I don't know, you observe people, I expect we do it ourselves too, but you can see it in other people easier. They just make their own problems. And sometimes simply by a simple reaction, it might actually be saying nothing, but just being there, we can stop it escalating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point too, thank you. And in fact, you know, that's well, in the next session, we'll be looking at suffering in a bit more detail. And I think you've kind of highlighted there that that's one of the aspects of suffering, is that there is the original pain or difficulty or problem. And then depending on how we ourselves react to it, to our own difficulties or problems, we can make it better or worse. We can add to it by getting this escalation, this thing, or by our behaviour, if other people are involved. Or we can try, take a few deep breaths, maybe do that kind of, you know, sort of mindful meditation for a short while, and just keep things a bit more in perspective. So I think that's a very good point. Thank you, Anna. Yeah. Sue?
Yes, I was just going to add to the conversation, having worked with vulnerability for the whole of my working life as a nurse, and, you know, remember some situations where I found myself totally overwhelmed by what I was hearing and witnessing. And, you know, it was simply too big, too big for me to hear. But I guess in terms of what it taught me was, you know, if I felt that and it wasn't my issue, I was listening to it, it gave me such invaluable insights as to how enormous this was for the individual. Does that make sense? Mm. You know, it was overwhelming, but it's not my issue, but I felt it as if it was. So goodness knows what it's like if it is actually your issue. Yeah. And I think that in turn, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have supervision in the work that I did, but in turn that enabled me to, in some ways, continue to develop being compassionate, because it gives you that valuable insight as to how enormous, you know, in the face of adversity, the enormous things that people have to find a place in their lives to live with. Do you know what I mean? And in my professional life, I found that very helpful. So it never changed the degree of being taken by surprise on occasions. never changed that. But it just, you know, it just helped in understanding, really. It's quite hard to articulate, isn't it? Because they're such deep feelings. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, but thank you. That's helpful. Yeah, and in a sense echoed something of what Tracy said of, you know, when you're saying if it's bad, this bad for me, how awful it must be for them. You know, Tracy, you were saying I could get away, but my friend couldn't. That was it. And that's a fact of life, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, to be able to use it, that sounds but to be able to kind of learn something from that, I guess, take something from that, helpful, is can be good. Avril, sorry, yeah.
No, I was just going to say that compassion then becomes a coping method almost, just when things are so overwhelmingly moving, and so is it a coping mechanism, compassion?
Yeah, I think I'll just briefly mention here, thank you, Avril, the set which we'll look at next, but the third part of the definition, remember I said there's the distinction between empathy, which many of us I think are describing here, this feeling with the other person, and compassion, which is the wish to remove it, but actually there's more than that. I was reading an article by Matteo Ricciardo, a Buddhist monk and meditator, and he was talking about this. He was involved in some experiments to do with measuring compassion and sort of brain scan type things. And that was when they noticed that within empathy, the same areas of suffering kind of lit up in one's own brain. Whereas when he was meditating on compassion and doing it from a Buddhist point of view, had some kind of bigger context to make sense of it, whether it be a philosophy, a religion, just your own kind of worldview. That once it moved to compassion and he had something to do and there was a particular meditation he could do, then actually the bits of the brain kind of, you know, changed, and actually the bits of brain lit up that were to do with, not pleasure exactly, but you know, with well-being, those bits lit up. So it's moving from empathy to compassion. And I think that movement has that sense of a context and understanding. And that's part of it, is wisdom, recognizing what's possible and what's not, recognizing, you know, that other people are suffering, and maybe having some kind of mechanism like a meditation technique or a phrase or something that you would say to yourself can actually move us beyond that overwhelm and beyond that exhaustion that comes with the overwhelm, I think. Okay, so we've got until 10:15. So let's try a meditation now, if that's okay. And then we'll stop just a minute or two before tea break. And then have tea break. So let's get back into a comfortable posture, supportive posture. And this will be a different kind of meditation where I'll take us through, I'll make some suggestions and try to develop some kind of inner sense of what I'm saying, really. But first of all, sit and connect with home, with your breath, with that inner space of calm and peace. So compassion often manifests in kindness, maybe kind act or words, or merely just a kind presence. So let's have a look at, investigate kindness, our experience of kindness for a while. So can you think of someone in your own life who's been a figure of kindness for you? The mere recollection of whom fills you with joy and gratitude. It might be a teacher who gently nudged you along at school and helped you recognize your personal strengths early on. It might be a loyal friend who lets you know they have your back. Or it could be your parents who provided you with a powerful anchor as you grew up. If no memory of a specific person comes up immediately, leave the question open and stay with the breath. Maybe sleep on it tonight. If somebody has come up, if you get a sense of that person, then try to kind of focus on the felt sense. Senses of joy and gratitude that come as you think of that person, as you imagine that person. maybe call to mind now any occasions when you've been the beneficiary of compassionate or kind acts. For example, when if your car or computer broke down, somebody came along and fixed it. When you were completely lost somewhere, had no idea where to go, somebody helped you find the way. When you were feeling insecure in a different, difficult situation, a new situation, a new job or a new place, a new home, somebody reached out to you in some way to make you feel welcome and at home. Sit for a while and let any memories arise. And again, as they do, as they take shape in your mind, take form in your mind, try to get a sense of what it felt like, what it feels like, even to remember it, what it felt like at the time. The relief. The gratitude. Or maybe there have been times of bigger griefs and trauma in your life. Has there been somebody there who was maybe able to offer practical help? Or maybe not, but they could maybe help by listening, by being there, by giving a hug when it was needed. The great American writer Maya Angelou once said, "People may forget what you said, they may forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel." That's true in my experience, I think. So maybe now just briefly call to mind some time when you have acted out of compassion with kindness. And say maybe not done anything practical, but you've been with somebody. You've sat with them, you've been with them. emotions, the difficulties, the... How was it for you, I guess? It's not straightforward. It's not painless. But ultimately, how does it feel to act out of compassion? And then finally, briefly, as if we needed to be convinced, just try to imagine a day where there is no kindness. Even those small acts of kindness, like letting another motorist pull in, out in front of you, putting on your mask, smiling, even from behind your mask. Actually, society wouldn't function. Compassion and kindness are the oil that keeps the wheels moving. They're not luxuries, they're necessities, as the Dalai Lama often says. Okay, and then gently end the meditation. Okay, so almost tea break. If there's anything anybody wanted to say just before we go off, then please indicate. If not, let's go and have a nice cup of tea. Okay.